Generally, the only way to become unstoppable is to grow that level of like self-love for yourself, right? Is to really reject the world wanting to tell you that you have to prove yourself or there's something wrong with you or you're not worthy or you have to constantly be doing. The more you can lean into like knowing that you're a human, flaws and all, and that you're magnificent and worthy and lovable, nothing else can really touch you after that.
Welcome to the Unstoppable Woman podcast, where we explore what it means to create a truly exquisite life. I'm your host, Amira Alvarez, inviting you to be part of these intimate conversations about feminine ambition, what lies beyond traditional notions of success, and how to answer the question, what's next when you've already achieved so much? Let's dive in.
Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Unstoppable Woman podcast. I'm your host, Amira Alvarez. I'm the founder and CEO of The Unstoppable Woman, where we help women have an exquisite life and make the kind of income that they want while having everything else as well. I know it sounds impossible, but that's what we're after and that's what we're doing. And I'm super excited to have on the podcast as a guest someone who has made a big shift in her own life to go after what she really wants, that version of an exquisite life. And her name is Goli Kalkaran, and she has a beautiful business and a beautiful podcast called Lessons from a Quitter. She is someone who has shifted out of a corporate career and into working for herself and has a lot to share about what that takes. So welcome to the podcast, Goli. So happy to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor to be here.
Hey there. I just want to take a quick moment and ask, what's the thing holding you back from your own success? The hidden shadow or saboteur potentially at play for you? And do you know how to find it? We often have that one thing keeping us from our next level. And it's not always the strategic move. It's often the internal one. I found in my own journey of success in building my exquisite life, it's what I call a core wound or loyalty pack. What's that? I share more at theunstoppablewoman.com, right on the homepage. Find out more at theunstoppablewoman.com. Now, let's get back to our episode.
Okay, so let's set the tone for people. Let's set the frame. What's your story? Give us the story in a nutshell, like where you were and how you got here.
Just the Cliff Notes version is I was kind of like a lot of people that are type A overachieving personalities. I put my head down, did what I was told, did good in school, you know, picked a path, and I decided to become a lawyer, and I just never questioned it. And I was really successful at it. And I got into a really great law school and really never looked up until I became a lawyer. And I was sort of like, what the hell did I get myself into? I don't actually like this at all. And so I found myself like a lot of people where you sort of adopt the mindset of like, well, life isn't supposed to be fun and you're an adult and now you're successful and this is what you do. And I sort of sucked it up and worked as a lawyer for about 7 or 8 years and was really unhappy the whole time. I was in an industry where a lot of people were unhappy, so you don't really bat an eye because it's like, of course we all hate it. We hate the hours, we hate the stress, we hate, but this is what it is. Until it wasn't, until it was like to a point where I was like, I can't do this anymore. And so in 2014, I quit without really knowing what I was going to do. I felt very lost, very ashamed. I felt like a failure. I had all of those thoughts, but I was just like, I can't live the rest of my life doing something I hate. And so that sort of started me on a journey of figuring out like, who am I? What do I want? What is my life? What do I want my life to look like? And that has had lots of twists and turns. And I started a very different business, manufacturing photo booths for a couple of years. But through that time, I really like learned about myself. I learned a lot about mindset work and personal development. And then in 2018, I decided to start Lessons from a Quitter, mostly because I kept having this conversation with so many people where either they would tell me like, oh, I wish I could quit. And I wanted to be like, you can do something else. You can start over. Or people that had quit, but nobody was talking about it. Like there was all these people I would meet who would say like, oh yeah, I used to be a doctor. And now, you know, I make these like artisan chocolates in my shop. And I'm like, wait, what? What's that story? How did that happen? You know? And so I really started the podcast just to interview people about their stories of quitting and making these really big shifts. And then that just led to me wanting to help people sort of in the way you do, like really figure out what is the best life that you can lead? What is the life you want to lead? And how do we kind of figure that out? And so I became a life coach and then a master certified life coach and I now have a community called the Quitter Club where I help people really with the same questions of like, what does happiness mean to me? What is success for me? What do I want? How do I go out and get it? How do I do that with the very real confines of like, I need to make a living and I need to pay my bills? And how do, but like, how can I not let that stop me from slowly building on the life that I want? And so that's how I'm here today.
I love it. I love it. Okay. So many juicy things to dive into. So first of all, I think this message is going to resonate a lot with the people listening to this podcast, because we tend to attract those women who are the high achievers, the ones that were like heads down. I'm going to get the good grades. I'm going to be top of my class. I'm going to get into the best schools. I'm going to drive myself. Like, and here's the thing, they know how to win according to the rules.
Totally.
Right. But if in life, after you get out of school, if the thing that you want isn't defined by the same rules that you've learned, you have to figure out your own rules.
That was the hardest part for me, is when you've always looked to somebody else to tell you what the next path is or what the next step is, and you're good at doing it. Like I always say this too, like I'm an entrepreneur now. I was a fantastic employee, like the best. I never got any bad remarks. I never got, you know, like you tell me what to do and I will do it at 110%. But it became really difficult when it's like, but what if there's no one telling you what to do? Then what? Like there's no path that you have to sort of carve out for yourself. That's when it's terrifying, because it's like, well, what is the right next step? And how do I know? And, you know, what if it doesn't work? And how do I even know this is going to work out if I try this? And so that is definitely the scariest thing for people that are used to kind of being in a lane and like being told what to do.
100%, because we're trained to work to the test. We're trained to get like do the homework, work to the test, get the thing done for the teacher, the professor, whatever it is. So now we're out on our own and it's terrifying. And how do I face all these things and do all these things? So absolutely, this is the challenge of entrepreneurship. But I want to go back to something, because it seems like for you, there was like a lot of shame around this idea of quitting. And in your sort of setup of this, you're like, oh, wait, you were a doctor and now you're doing this. And what's that story? And that people aren't actually talking about reinventing themselves or recreating themselves, because there might be a little bit of shame there. Where do you think that shame comes from?
Oh, I think there's a lot of shame. And that's what a lot of what I work with people is, because for a lot of us, especially in America, especially within our system, like, so much of what you do becomes a part of your identity. We take it on as that identity. And so, and for a lot of us, obviously, like, there's a lot of pride behind it. You get this kind of dopamine hits. Like if you tell someone you're a lawyer or a doctor or an engineer or a professor or whatever, it's like there's an air about it. And it's almost as if like this unspoken kind of bias towards like a good bias, where it's like, oh, you're successful and you're smart and you get all these like privileges kind of conferred by just saying, I do this, I do that, right? We have a lot of like identity. Let's say even if like, let's say whatever it is, you're a teacher, automatically people have thoughts about you like, oh, you're probably nurturing and caring and you know, are selfless and all these things. And so we all gain a lot of benefits. And so when you're starting to strip that identity, there's a lot that can come with that, like a lot of really like a grief, but also a lot of shame, because by society standards, you've made it, you've been successful, right? And I think for a lot of us, when it's like, when we got there and then we say, but I don't want this, there's so much shame around, am I being ungrateful? Like so many people would kill to have this, right? I'm making a really good living. Like for, I think a lot of us, like for me, a lot of immigrants, it's like our parents came here to give us a better life. Like how dare I say I don't want this, right? Like I have something so good. And so there was so much around that for me that was like, I have sacrificed.
Do you think there's anything around, this is all really, really interesting. Yeah. Do you think there's anything around making a mistake? Like,
totally.
Oh my God, I've invested in law school. I've invested in med school. I've spent my career, the last 10 years building this career. And now I'm just going to like throw it out.
Totally. Yeah. There's so much of that. And there's so much of really admitting, again, there's shame because you feel like I'm a failure if I walk away, because we have such this connotation that like you have to pick one thing and then stick to it. So our only measure of success is longevity, but not like, hey, I've, you know, like you said, like I could just reinvent myself, or maybe I should hopefully grow. So what I wanted at 20 is not what I want at 30 or 40 or 50, right? But we don't have that in our society. So it's like admission of like, maybe this isn't for me, is this admission of I failed, right? I've quit.
So how do we turn that around, Goalie? So this is a big thing. We talk a lot about identity and mindset and programming and all of that on this podcast. And I'd love to hear your perspective on, okay, so you're at this crossroads. You're not happy with your life. It's not where you want it to be, or at least your career, and it's infusing everything else in your life. It's certainly not an unstoppable, exquisite life. Yeah. You're like in the grind. And yet you have this feeling like, if I stop, if I shift, if I go in a different direction, it's going to be admitting failure or that I was a mistake, or even things like loyalty pacts with our parents. Like you mentioned the immigrants sort of dilemma, right? Like I did it, right? I did it according to the way mom and dad had the vision of, and like, now if I change, am I letting them down? So all of that's running under the surface.
Yeah.
How do you reframe that and help people with this identity issue that comes up?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of what we do, and you use the perfect word, is reframing. And the good news, the bad news and the good news, is that these are only thoughts. They're just beliefs. They're made up. Somebody decided at some point in history that like, we got to pick a career and we got to stick to it for the rest of our lives. Like, that's not like a real rule of the universe. It's just like some, you know, we decided for capitalism that it was better for people to stick to one career. And it is for society. It's better because then we have, you know, enough doctors and we have enough lawyers and we have people that stick to these things. But it was also made up. And the reason I say it's a good news and a bad news,
I'm going to pause there for a second.
Yeah.
Let's dig in there, because I think that might not be true. I get what you're saying. Like, society wants us to pick a career and do it. But I don't know that it's the best thing.
I don't know the best thing either. I think that there can be. I just think that if you were looking at like a blank slate of like how to create a society where your goal is a functioning society, it's not the happiness of maybe the constituents. I think a lot of people, when you look at like, let's say even within capitalism, like, I think it is in the best interest of capitalism to try to get people to be as productive as possible and to sit, you know, and there's.
But would we be more productive?
Sure.
Okay. I think you're going to agree with me here, because like if we take a different lens on this, a different perspective on this, aren't we going to be more productive when we're in growth, when we're like challenged, when we're building something new for ourselves? We're like engaged in a different way than if we're bored, like just dialing it in because you have to go to work, right?
Sure.
That's not productive.
No, for sure. And I think there's tons of studies even showing that like when you are happy, when you are engaged, you're going to be more productive. When you know, there's so many facets of that with society. Like if your basic needs are met, if you have all, there's so much more. There's so much that we could do to get people to be more, you know, productive and involved. And but I the reason I just say it is that you're right. I don't think it's the only way or the right way. I say like, I understand that like people that were, you know, when the 40-hour work week, for instance, came about, I understand that like the thought behind it was like, this is the best thing at the time. And so that's what we were ingrained with. I think my only point is that like, even that is just a thought that we can change, right? It's something we can reframe. It's something we can look at and see like exactly what you're saying is like, this isn't the truth. It's not like it's better for everyone to just stick with one thing, right? And I think for me, when I look at like quitting, one of the reasons I named my podcast and my whole platform that, and I really use the word quitting, is because I want to change the connotation of that word. Because the reality is that you're always quitting something, right? Like we have to make, our life is a series of choices that leads us into different directions. And so even if I choose to stay in the law, that means I'm quitting on my dreams. I'm quitting on other possibilities. I'm quitting on other lives that I might be able to live because I'm choosing this, right? And deciding to quit law just opened me up to other lives that I was choosing. And I think that to have this idea, like, again, for me, it's so absurd to think that anything that we would pick at 18, 20, 25 is something that we would have to keep until we're 70, you know? It's like, there is, you know, I mean, if you imagine like anything else, if they were like, you have to stay friends with the only people that you were friends with at 18, because that's who you decided to be friends with. And that's it. It's like, that's crazy. Why would you need to do that? And so I think,
or date the same people that you dated. I was like, oh,
yeah,
that would be totally horrible,
horrifying, right? But even then, and I think there's a lot more. Luckily, there's a change in narrative, and even within you know, when we talk about marriage and stuff, it was the same thing back in the day. It's like the only marker of success was longevity, was like if you stay together. And now we're like, well, why would you stay together if you're miserable the whole time, or if you're making each other miserable? Like, why not?
Let's pause there for a second. This is a good one, goalies.
Hey, Amira here. Want to know more about what keeps uber successful women from achieving everything they want in life? Find out more at theunstoppablewoman.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
So we're expanding the conversation here around quitting, not just in your career, but in relationships. Okay, so as someone who had a really good partnership in her marriage, right? Like married to a good guy, nice guy. We did life really well together, but ultimately we did not have sexual chemistry. And that was like, I thought there was something wrong with me. He was unsatisfied. There were other things going on, but that was like the main thing. And I'm like pulling back the curtains here because I think that so many people feel stuck around that. And just as a note, you can work on all of that and it can get better. There are many relationships where it does. In mine, it didn't.
Sure.
And so we amicably went a different way. But boy, was there, it scares women when they hear that. Like, now I'm having great sex. It's not about me, right? It's
right.
That chemistry, all of that.
Yeah.
But it, boy, does it scare women to hear that, like that you can quote unquote quit. I would say evolve beyond, like I'm using the framing in my own business around a phoenix rising, like letting go of this version of the business and calling in this version of the business.
Yes.
So that's kind of the reframe that I put on it. But I want to go someplace with this because I think this is so scary, both in the relationship world and in the career world, because we perhaps inaccurately associate associate our security with that relationship or that job. And yet there's some, so I would say that our security comes from our own confidence in ourselves, our own ability to create whatever we want, our internal resilience and capacity.
Yeah.
This has to do with skill set. This has to do with mindset, has to do with a lot of different things. The ability to take action in the face of fear, lots and lots. And yet, even for people who understand that, the idea of, oh, I'm going to let go of this channel of income, whether you're an entrepreneur or in a career path working in a company, like you were a lawyer. You had this income. How can I just let go of that and still feel secure? So have you coached people around the security issue?
Yeah, it's a great question. Again, I think that there's two parts to this. And this is what I always coach people on, especially with the money and financial stuff, is that there's absolutely the finances of it. And then there's the thoughts about the finances. And so the reason I say this is because for a lot of us, the finances almost become an excuse where a lot of people will tell me like, well, I can't quit because I need to make this income, right? And then if I ask them a little bit about like, okay, well, how much do you need to make? Like, what's your monthly? Like, they have no idea what their numbers are. They have no idea what their expenses are. They don't know how much. And I'm like, okay, well, then they can't be this. Like, we need to really understand because maybe you're making $10,000 a month and you really only need to make $5,000. And so that gives you some wiggle room of like, okay, do you want to work part-time while you're building this business? There's some options there. But if you sort of have this hard stop, and it's, again, it's not out of nowhere. We've all, like you said, we've all been programmed to believe that we need a, you know, W-2 salary kind of paycheck every 2 weeks to feel secure. And so it's almost like it's just as like I've had so many clients who will do this work. They'll create a runway. They'll create like a year, 2 years of savings that like they could not work for 2 years and be okay. And they'll still tell me like, I don't feel secure enough to be able to quit. And so you start realizing it's not the money. It's because nothing will make you feel secure. No amount of money, because you're telling yourself, oh God, if I don't have this paycheck, then I can't pay my bills or whatnot. And so what I really work with people on is, okay, let's figure out the finances. And nobody is saying that you have to quit cold turkey. Nobody is saying that you have to quit with no income, right? Like, luckily we live in a time where like you can build a business on the side and you can build it slowly and you can work remotely and you can work part-time and there's so many other avenues. And then when you start figuring out like what your actual numbers are, you can figure out like what your runway is. And then you can figure out, you know, if I have a year runway saved up, let's say by the time I quit and my fear is still, but I'm afraid I'm going to run out of money. Well, I have a lot of strategies that I can implement in that year. Like if I notice by 6 months, I haven't made any money, it doesn't mean I have to continue. You know, I can get a part-time job then. I can go drive for Uber. I could do whatever. There's so many other ways. I could, you know, rent out a room in my house. I can move, downsize and move back in with my family. We can come up with strategies of what you would do. And a lot of people don't want to do those things. That's fine. But I think that we do ourselves a disservice when before we even look at what is the possibility, how could I make this work? We're like, well, no, I need money, so I can't, you know? And I used to do the same thing. I used to think like, well, no, I make this much. I can never replace this. What's fascinating is like, I make way more than I ever did as a lawyer. And I never, if you told me this in 2014, if you told me I would make more money as a life coach, I would have told you you're insane. But it was because I wasn't willing to look for it, look for the evidence to see how it's possible. I was really just set in what I had been told is like, this is as good as it gets. And I was working like 80 hours a week, making less than I make now, working about 30, because the world has changed online, like what you are able to do online has changed.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to like, just willing to look at it and see where is it really my security? And where is it just my fear? My fear because yeah. I've been told to do the right thing, to play it safe, to, you know, get my retirement account in order. And like, that's all I kind of, like, if I don't have that, I feel panicked.
Now, I know people have a hard time letting go of old belief patterns and old identities. It's very hard. But oftentimes, one of the things that I share is like this law of sacrifice, like let go of something of a lower nature in order to let in something of a higher nature. And these kinds of limiting beliefs, which is, you know, kind of an overdone phrase, but you've given a lot of concrete examples of what that looks like that I think people will really relate to. You have to actually sacrifice that. You actually have to let go of that. And then my experience has been, then you have to act in accordance with the new belief or the new thing that you're calling in. And have the lived experience of leaning into that and not dying, things not going to hell in a handbasket, right? You going, okay, well, that was not exactly what I expected. This kind of went awry, but I'm still here and I'm still happier than I was.
Right.
So fantastic. Is there ever a case where you work with someone and you evaluate and realize, they're actually really happy or not necessarily happy. They're actually, it's a good fit for them to stay in the job, but they need to change their approach to it.
100%.
That's actually that look like?
That's probably half the people that I work with. So when I say like I have the quitter club, it's not about quitting your job, to be honest. It's truly just about quitting what's not working for you. And for every person, that's different. So I teach a very specific type of thought work and mindset work. And the point of this is really like reframing, like you said, all of these thoughts and really understanding where you have more power. And a lot of what I, like the first stage in what I work with people is learning how to love where they're at and figuring out what, how am I adding to a lot of my own misery here? How am I creating a lot of problems? Maybe through my people pleasing, because I never say no and I never set boundaries. So I'm burned out because I'm taking on the work of like three people. Whether it's my perfectionism, where it's like, it's never good enough for me. And so I'm constantly beating myself up, even though I have great reviews and everybody, I'm doing a great job. Or it's like my imposter syndrome, right? There's a lot of things where we add a lot of pain to ourselves in the jobs that we're in. And so I work with a lot of people that once they do that work, they actually love what they do. And it's amazing because they're like, oh, if I can have a realistic, you know, standard for myself, if I can lower that inner critic voice, if I can start seeing that I'm not an imposter and all the stuff that I was ignoring, if I can set boundaries and have my weekends back, right? If I can start living the life that I want, I actually love the work that I'm doing. I actually feel really passionate about it. That's fantastic. And we also do this work because like I said, when we're doing this work of like figuring out your runway, for a lot of people, they come to me and say like, I can't quit for the next 2 years. I'm like, great, great. Like I'm either going to vest, I'm going to get certain shares, whatever. I have to be here. Perfect. Then we're going to work on you loving it there until until you're ready to leave. So I work with a lot of people that are in that. And then I also work with a lot of people that are like, no, this just isn't for me and I need to figure out a way out. And that's fine too. But I think that the way that it always starts is like really realizing the power that you have in your own life, exactly where you are without changing anything. Because when you realize that, then one of the phrases I always say to people that come to me is like, because a lot of people I see like start jumping from job to job. And it's like, it doesn't matter what job you go to if you're going to take the same brain with you. So like if you have a brain that can't say no to people, that feels uncomfortable advocating for yourself, you can change however many jobs you want. But you're never going to find a job where the boss is exactly the way you want and sets boundaries. The clients are super nice and never, you know, mean to you. And you get along with every coworker and there's no stress because you're the one that's going to bring a lot of the stress to it. So we really work on like, let's change our own brain where we're at. And then it becomes easier to, you know, make the jump and deal with the fears and do all that stuff. Or you end up realizing, hey, I'm actually really good at this job. I love it here and I'm going to stay.
100%. 100%. Love what you said about loving where you're at.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and I think that, yes, we have to look at who we're being, everything you just said around like, okay, this is me. I'm 100% personally responsible for all my outcomes.
Yeah.
The good, the bad, the messy, all of it, right? Yeah. This is me. I'm creating this. Okay. I'm going to take that with me wherever I go. So let's clean that up and match that plus love where you're at, which includes loving who you are, right? That aspect of you that is, you know, doing the best she can with what she has, right? And appreciating that side of things. So
totally.
I love that. I love that.
Most ambitious women I work with already have good lives, possibly even great. But there's often this one area that is fine as is, but not yet exquisite. And yet, when we unlock that one area, they access a whole new level. I want to personally invite you to book a complimentary call with me and discover what that unlock could do for you. These calls are for women who have done at least a million or more in their business or executive career and are ready for an exquisite life inside and out. You can book our conversation at theunstoppablewoman.com/connect.
Okay, let's shift gears a little bit and talk about how you think this might be different for women versus men. You probably work with both, but like, what is the difference in how women approach these big shifts in their life? Instead of calling them quitting, let's call them big shifts, right? Letting go of things that aren't working and letting in things that are.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
Yeah, I mean, huge. There's huge differences. The reality is like we just live in the patriarchy. And so women are programmed with much different beliefs. And so for the men that I see, for men, typically, there's not a lot of shame. Actually, there's a lot more of just the fear of like they, you know, they have been raised in the patriarchy to believe that they're the breadwinner and they have to provide and they have to make the most or whatever. So there's a lot of around that, just identity around money and providing. For women, there is the need to make your own money, the need to, you know, be independent. But there is a lot of the shame of like women have been socialized to believe like we should just be grateful for every opportunity we're given and we should, you know, like don't make waves and be quiet. And that's why a lot of women don't advocate for themselves. Like they don't negotiate. They don't ask for raises where like so many men do that. We've simply been socialized to not rock the boat, never let them think that you're, you know, a bitch or mean or whatever. And so there's a lot of working through that socialization. There's also a lot of like women in the patriarchy have been programmed to believe that our value comes in how we serve other people, whether it's our children, our spouses, our parents, or corporate America, right? And so there's a lot of guilt about leaving. There's a lot of guilt about like, you know, leaving coworkers high and dry or my boss is going to be mad at me, even if you're leaving and you're not going to work with them anymore. There's a lot of that. There's also a lot of like when I was talking about like even let's say the guilt about parents or, you know, my spouse, there's this like, well, I was, you know, the golden child or the good daughter that became a lawyer. Like, how could I do this to my parents and stuff? So there's just a lot more guilt and shame, I think, around women because women have just been socialized to take that on. The last thing I will say is that women have also very much been socialized to believe that like your needs and your wants are last and like everybody else's needs and wants are before yours. And you have to think about everybody else before yourself. And so it's really hard for women to even admit what they want and to admit that like, this isn't what I want. And
because it's huge.
Yeah. And so it's like, that is one of the hardest things is just getting like the women I work with is to like opening up to like, what is it that you want out of this life? And I think that we are made to feel like I'm being greedy, I'm being selfish, I'm being, you know, like whatever all of the terms are. And so we shut it down. I don't need this. I'll just take my little slice of the pie and be happy with that. And so I think really opening up that is the hardest thing with
100%. I find that the events that I do when I'm helping people claim their desire, because that's like the first step, right? It's like, totally. I call it the manifestation matrix or the exquisite life plan. Like, what is it that you want? And so often we have a litany, and this is not bad. It's just where we start, but a litany of, I don't want this. I don't want this. I don't want this. Very easy to say, no, I don't want this, or I'm in complaint around this, or this is challenging for me. But it's very hard for women, it seems, it appears through my experience, to shift that and refocus it to claiming what we actually want. And yet desire is causative. It's what, if you can get clear on what you truly desire, you can really create this life plan for yourself that is exquisite. But you can't have that exquisite life plan if you don't really say, this is what I want.
Yeah.
And so often it looks like, shouldn't I be happy with what I have?
Exactly.
I love so much.
Exactly. Right?
I want to go back to one thing you mentioned also, the provider archetype, because I think men certainly have this provider archetype, but I work with women a lot on this integration and harmonizing of the masculine and the feminine essence in us, right? And the masculine essence tends to have that sort of provider archetype. And so many driven women, really ambitious go-getters, they have taken on in the workplace, and then it seeps into all areas of their life, because this is, you know, you went to law school. This is how we, that focus, that discipline, that go out and get it, bring it home. You know, I'm going to, you know, slay the mammoth, right? And and come back, right?
Yeah.
And provide. We're trained to work in this way. So that provider archetype seems to be really strong with women. How do you help them see that they will be provided for, that they can be supported by life, if you will?
A lot of what we look at is, for me, I do a lot of work of like really looking at where these beliefs came from. And so for a lot of women, you're right, is that we have had to fight tooth and nail for pretty much anything. And so we fought for the right to be able to work, right, and to provide. And so it is a very deep part of a lot of very strong and overachieving women. Like for a lot of us, there is this almost obligation to womanhood, right? It's like, I know, like for me, one of the hardest parts of me quitting, even though I'd been with my husband for, by the time I quit, we'd been together for 10 years and we'd been married for like 5 or 6. And he's the sweetest man, would never ever, like, there was never, we shared everything, right? But the idea of not having an income, even though I didn't need it, like we could survive on his income, but the idea of me being dependent on a man for his income was so against everything in my, like everything I'd worked for, everything that made me an independent woman, right? That was the hardest part of my identity to get over, in the sense of like knowing like, okay, I'm allowed to ask for help right now. And that doesn't mean I'm not going to provide. And that doesn't mean that I can't take care of myself. And that doesn't mean if push came to shove, you know? So what I work with people is really understanding like where these beliefs came from, that they're not yours. They didn't just like, we weren't born doing this, but like you have had to fight. And so you have created kind of this armor of like, I will be damned if I ever need to depend on someone else. I will provide for myself and everybody else. I will show everybody that I can do it, you know, with my hands tied behind my back, because like I have to prove, right? And when we stop having to prove, and when we can say like, I am worthy just the way I am, and I don't need to prove, and I'm allowed to ask for help, and I'm allowed to be supported, and that doesn't make me less of a woman, or that doesn't make me, you know, whatever it is, weak, or whatever it is, the thoughts that we have. When we can start seeing that, then we can like allow kind of the other energy, you know, more feminine energy to come in. We can allow for more support. We can see how like maybe that support, like I think about this now. I thought about this a lot then, like what if me asking for this support is what helps me lead later, right? Is what helps me step into this power in a more balanced way, which is what it's done, right? Like I now have a much bigger business because I wasn't caught in, no, I have to prove myself all the time. Like, can I
be willing? Which is so exhausting.
So exhausting. Right? So and it's a never-ending hamster wheel because you'll never prove yourself.
You can't, it by definition, right? Yeah. By the definition. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking, wow, I am so exhausted. I'm overwhelmed. I'm in the grind. I'm going hard every single day, but I want to have some spaciousness. You have to realize that you're going to have to do some deep identity work, some deep belief work. So really good, really juicy conversation. So before I ask my final questions, where can people find you and what should they look for when they go seek you out?
Yeah, come find me pretty much really anywhere at Lessons from a Quitter. I think if you listen to podcasts, definitely check out the podcast, or you can find me on Instagram there. You can, for like resources, you can go to the website, Lessons from a Quitter. I have a quiz on there. It's just lessonsfromaquitter.com/quiz. That it's a 2-minute quiz that will help you kind of get out of the spinning. I think for people, they spin for so long of like, should I quit? Should I not? Should I go after something? And not only will it tell you kind of what stage you're in, it'll give you a really detailed guide for like, what is the next 3 things you should focus on so you don't get caught in all of the overwhelm and like you can move to whatever the next step is that you need to get on. So if that's where you're at, definitely check out the quiz. You can get that on the website and come say hi to me on Instagram.
Okay. So my final questions are, how do you continue to learn and stay on top of your game?
As a like, you know, self-prescribed nerd who has always loved school, I just love learning. So it's not even that I do it really to stay on top of the game. I allow my curiosity to lead me. So I just try to learn things I'm curious about. Instead of forcing myself to learn things that everybody else says you should learn, I really focus on like, what excites me? What do I want to talk about? So I read a lot of books about things. For me, it happens to have always been really like psychology and mindset stuff. So I read a lot about like just the brain and how our brains work and why we do things. I read a lot about the patriarchy and history and how we've kind of come to this point because I love like understanding. So I think like the biggest thing for me is like I stopped shoulding myself a long time ago. Like I should know about all of this. I should be doing it. It's like I started like really asking like, what do I want? And so I think leading with that curiosity has helped me want to learn more about certain things, not everything, obviously. So that's really how I have like continued to want to constantly educate myself.
Fantastic. Desire is causative. So that's a great, like, that's what's leading you forward into your growth. So good. Okay. And what do you think defines an unstoppable woman?
I have 2 answers to that. I think it comes in a name. I think that the reality is that like, you are unstoppable if you don't stop, right? I think for a lot of us, really grounding in this understanding of how resilient and resourceful we are. And so anything that's maybe a bump in the road or some kind of detour or some kind of like, let's say a quitting, a failure, whatever you want to call it, whatever is happening is not the end. So as long as you're not going to stop. So like knowing that and really identify, like creating that as part of your identity. Like I know for me, it's such a part of my identity that no matter what, I'll figure it out. No matter what happens, I will figure it out. And that makes me unstoppable. It doesn't mean that I'm going to get it right. Doesn't mean that I'm not going to fail. Doesn't mean that it's not going to be really painful at times. But I just know I'll navigate it. One way or another, I'll figure it out. So I feel like that really is what makes it. But to go with a little bit more of like a woo-woo and what I really have realized now from coaching hundreds of people is like the only way to become unstoppable is to grow that level of like self-love for yourself, right? Is to really reject the world wanting to tell you that you have to prove yourself or there's something wrong with you or you're not worthy or you have to constantly be doing. The more you can lean into like knowing that you're a human, flaws and all, and that you're magnificent and worthy and lovable, nothing else can really touch you after that. You're just kind of like, yeah, you know, I made these mistakes. I did this thing, but I will always have my own back. I feel like
that's huge.
Yeah,
totally. So that's a great segue for my final question, which is, what do you love most about yourself?
To be honest, I love that I'm willing to constantly have my own back no matter what. Like I'm willing to allow myself to be a human. I'm willing to mess up badly and look at it. I'm willing to see where I'm wrong and learn from it. And none of that ever means that I make myself bad or I make myself, you know, hate myself or I beat myself up. It's always like really from a place of compassion. And I feel like that has what is what has given me kind of the strength to create the life that I want. And so I'm grateful to myself for that, for being able to have that compassion.
Love it. So, so good, Goli. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It's been a great conversation. I'm sure our listeners are going to eat this up and love it when it goes live. And for those of you listening, thank you so much for being loyal listeners. If you haven't yet subscribed, please subscribe to the podcast and please keep your ears and eyes open for the Exquisite Life Plan event that will be coming out very, very soon. And I will be sharing more about that as the time approaches. So in the meantime, stay unstoppable and I'll catch you in the next episode. I'm Amira Alvarez, founder and CEO of The Unstoppable Woman. And thank you for listening.